Man, that intro is legit.
Yes, sir. Jeez.
I want to run through a brick wall every time I hear it.
What is up, everybody? Yo and hello. Mike Moynihan here. We got Cousin Oz and Victor, the rookie card specialist, joining us for another episode of the Hobby Hotline Tuesday edition. Yeah, Tuesday's where it's at because there's just no restriction on what we talk about on Tuesday. Saturday, you know, it's over on Bench Clear. We got to be cool, calm, and collected. Not here. This is our channel. We can do whatever we want. So we're going to talk through a couple things. Guys, how y'all feeling tonight?
Feeling good. Feeling good.
Yes, sir. Excited, man. Excited. We got some good topics we're going to cover tonight. So let's get it.
Mike, I've been a little worried about you, though, to be honest with you, man. I've been like...
What?
I have. You know, you typically got a video coming out like every 8 hours.
What?
And it's like your content in the last couple months has really dipped. What's going on?
I was telling Oz. I mean, I got life, man. I'm like, I try to film like 4 or 5 episodes on a Monday and I'll just knock them all out and then I'll release them over the week. But yeah, even that's been tough. You know, I've got all these between Chasing Cardboard and, you know, Hobby Think Tank and Bench Clear and Baseball Collector and Golden Age. It's too much. Sometimes you got to just slow down.
Yeah.
And it's spring break here in Texas. So even though it's like 50 degrees, it's like, wait a second,
really?
90 degrees the other day. It's like, we can't decide what season it is down here.
Yeah.
But it is the season for card shows, I will tell you. And we had two really big ones, you know, kind of standard big ones. The Philly show, which Oz, I'll let you talk about that in a second. We had the Dallas show. Both, from what I've heard, were just rocking. Like pack, excitement, you know, lots of deals happening. Oz, why don't you talk about the Philly show a little bit?
Yeah, man. Philly show, that was definitely packed from the moment it opened to the end. There was people constantly, you know, it was full. I could barely move, bro, to be honest. And they got a nice, a bigger venue that they moved to in Oaks, which is slightly a little bit out from Philly. But yeah, the people were there. There was deals being made. There were some people that were complaining a little bit that the prices were too high. But for the most part, the vibe was awesome, and I believe everybody just had a great time. People were having fun, and I went there, and I seen some cards, man, that I was looking for. I'm a big Allen Iverson collector. That's my main guy, my main PC, and I saw some grails there that I was ready to pull the trigger, and I was like, you know, they were asking for a little bit too much, so I left it at that. But yeah, man, overall experience, the hobby, if they said it was dead, you know, according to that show, that is not true. It is very alive.
Victor, when was the last show you went to, Victor?
I went to a local show that we have here this past weekend. You know, I'll be honest with you. It seems like over here in Northwest Indiana, Chicagoland region, it seems like autographed memorabilia to me carries more weight than actual sports cards. I'm kind of anticipating this coming weekend. We got the Chicago Spectacular. So I'm really looking forward to catching the vibe of how things are going. The shows around me have been okay. Nothing like spectacular, to be honest with you. But I am hearing rumblings like our more local shows, like an Orland Park show that we have or a Schaumburg show. Those are doing really well. But the ones around me locally here in Northwest Indiana have been kind of average, to be honest with you.
And I do think you're going to always have, and this is true now, hobby boom, whatever, you're going to have the haves and the have not. I mean, you're going to have shows that are just kind of stalwarts of the hobby. Yeah. Dallas has become that. Philly has been that for decades.
Yeah.
Strongsville, Nashville's up and coming. You know, that's a place people want to go. Burbank, which I went to last month, is up and coming in terms of, dude, you got to go. Like it, and it, there's a lot of word of mouth that gets around, guys talking and people doing content creation and talking about the shows. And I think that drives a lot of that. You don't get as much of that at the local level show, the smaller type show.
Yeah.
But you do get a lot of that at Philly and Dallas and Burbank, et cetera. So I think those will continue. I think the strong will stay strong. And I think the smaller shows are going to have a more uphill battle. But as you said, if it's a testimony to the health of the hobby, what you saw in Philly this weekend says hobby strong. Right.
Yeah, very strong. Very strong.
Everything I hear from Dallas, absolutely true. When I was in Burbank last month, it was bananas, busy, especially like, you know, the prime times, Friday afternoon, evening, Saturday all day was nuts. exactly what you'd expect in a normal show. So what is that? What can that tell us? Does that tell us anything about the health of the hobby? Can we use that as a barometer? Victor, you can go first if you want.
I think so. I think, you know, you can, you, I know me personally, I get a lot of excitement when I go to a show that's, that the vibe is exciting. You know what I mean? It just fuels my enthusiasm for the hobby all the more. To your point, what you were saying with the strong staying strong and the smaller shows kind of, you know, staying average per se, I think a lot of that is, you know, there's only so much that our hobby dollars can be stretched so far. You know what I mean? And I would rather save my dollars up for a couple of months and hit up a good, really good regional show and walk in there with a little bit more play money than I would going to local shows like every weekend. But yeah, I think the overall health from what I'm seeing on YouTube, especially looking at Philly and Dallas and Orland or Burbank, it's phenomenal what I'm seeing in the hobby.
Yeah, I agree, Victor. You know, you're talking about the smaller shows, and when the boom happened, it seemed like they were popping up everywhere. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a while there, it was just nonstop. People were going. But as it's died down a little bit, those local shows have now gotten a little bit smaller, not as many people attending. So like you're saying, save your money for those bigger shows. There's going to be more tables, more dealers, more cards. Not to mention you have the National right around the corner. So how much are people going to be spending right now, you know, when you have the granddaddy of them all coming up. But as far as, man, the people, just the excitement, that's when you can really tell, you know, that the hobby is alive and well. It was just a vibe, you know, just walking in there and the amount of people just smiling, having fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was cool. And it was a little bit of everything, vintage cards, newer cards, you know, the modern, they had the memorabilia, they had all, you know, bunch of the Eagles, bunch of, you know, Phillies players, Johnny Bench was there this time. We'll get into that, Mike. No, you know, it was just awesome. It was just awesome to go in there and to see it. And that feeling like, man, yeah, I love this hobby. I love collecting cards, but it feels good to know that what you're doing is legit when you see a bunch of other people feeling the same way.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting about shows. They're one of the most awesome hobby experiences you can have. It's way different than going to a card shop. We know, you know, nobody would doubt that. But fundamentally, after 40 years in this hobby, fundamentally, a card show hasn't changed at all. There are, you know, weird things on the periphery that are a little bit different, but at the core, a card show is the same today as it was in 1978. There's a bunch of dudes with tables and they have cards in them or on them, and kids and adults and all are going up and hawking their wares and trading and whatever. It is fundamentally the exact same. And I think there's an allure to that, right? Mm-hmm. That's attractive, that you're pretty much going to go to any show, you're pretty much going to get the same baseline experience. Now, corporate sponsor, you know, there's a lot of things that shows have added over the years and the decades, but the reality at its core base level, shows are not any different than they always have been. And that's the good, that's a great thing, by the way. I love that it's not become something that it doesn't need to be. You guys buying cards. Sorry, Victor.
I did feel a little sliver of change last year at the National with the corporate area. I think they did a decent job at creating a lot of bells and whistles in that corporate area. But as far as anywhere else, I really haven't. It's been business as usual, right?
Yeah. The National's different, right? I think you put the National in its own category of shows, and then you have every other one. The National, the granddaddy of them all. I love that from Oz, but true. The corporate area is there aren't corporate areas like that at any other show.
Yeah.
You might have little smidgens of it. There's not a Breakers Pavilion at anywhere other show other than the National. You've got, you know, the National has evolved and added things. The stage, you know, you got all kinds of stuff there one time a year. Most other shows, though, have definitely some corporate presence to them. No question. You know, you got to pay the bills, and those guys pay the bills for the show promoters. So I get it. But I just love that at its fundamental core, it's just a guy looking at cards on a table and wanting to buy something for his collection.
And it's funny you say that, Mike, is Jeff, the sports card investor. I'm sure you guys have heard of him.
Mm-hmm. Never heard of him.
But, you know, I guess he's come out with his own podcast. But I just seen, you know, scrolling through Instagram, seen a clip of him, and he was talking about how he feels shows need to take it to the next level. like almost like a casino type. They need to improve the lighting. They like keeping people in these environments longer so that they can sell more cars, trade more cards, spend more money, basically, as opposed to the old, you know, like you said, just having a table and guy, you know, 60-year-old guy with the same cards he's had for 40 years showing up and doing the same thing over and over again. And it kind of smells a little funky at times and this, that, and a third, but just moving it to the next generation to where now all people are included, not just us guys that love the hobby, but females, you know, people of color, just you know, maybe have a little DJ in the back, the lighting better, and, you know, making it a whole production. So what are your thoughts on that, guys? Like taking it to 21st century, whatever.
So I went with, when I was at Burbank, I went to the trade night that they had. I think they had one every night. I went to one of them. They had a DJ. They had, you know, sodas, and like they made it like a party atmosphere at the trade night. So I think that's a, like that to me is fine. That's a different kind of new agey, kind of not new agey, but more recent development to have trade nights all the time, you know?
Like, yeah.
That really started, where I really saw that hit home was obviously Ryan Card Collector 2 started the National Trade Night years ago, but 2 years ago in Chicago, I've never seen anything like it, where every hotel till the wee hours of the morning is dudes set up and people running around trading, buying, selling, setting up cards, trade nights everywhere. It's not, there's not one trade night. It's everywhere.
They're in the lobbies. They're in like hotel lobbies.
The lobbies. So it was like, whoa, this is, and then every show started doing trade nights. And that's good. That's a good thing to do. There's nothing wrong with it. And that's where I think maybe you can have, hey, how are we going to evolve this thing? Let's try these things in this environment versus on the showroom floor, right? I think, I don't know, it'd be weird. I don't want to have, you know, music blaring in my ear while I'm walking around a card show. That's not why I go to a card show. But I get the point of what maybe Jeff was trying to say.
I love the concept, to be honest with you, to modernize it, bring some youth and vitality to a show. I think I would personally be okay with it. But you know what else I'm wondering, guys, is in we're talking about the health of card shows currently, right? But I know near me, and maybe somebody in the comments would like to chime in on this or even hop on the show. That would be awesome. But I get a sense from what I'm seeing is that dealers are changing their perspective, and they are cutting bulk deals. And there is a vibe of I'm going to work with you. I'm going to give you a great deal. And they really are. I know this past weekend, I was very observant with that. Every dealer seemed to be willing to work, and even understanding that I would tell them I'm an eBay seller. So I'm looking for stuff, you know, inventory. And they're like, we got you. Just keep pulling. You know? And they're giving substantial, you know, discounts for that. And I'm wondering if anybody else has sensed that.
Well, Oz, you said that the Philly show, there were cards you were looking at that like, know, still, I feel like dealers, from my recent experience at shows, Dallas, Burbank, etc., dealers are, they're slow to come. They're quick to raise their prices, slow to drop them.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's yeah, I was feeling the same way at the Philly show and a lot of other people. We met up with Rob, the sports card therapist, and Ken Karen, sports card lessons. We met up with them, part of the, I don't know if you've heard of the Wolf Pack, which Cousin Tony and I are a part of. But we met up there, and they're from the Connecticut area, came down, and they were looking to wheel and deal. They had their Zion cases ready to roll. And, you know, Rob's set up all up and down the East Coast doing his thing. And he was, him and Ken were like, man, these prices are high. You know, we were just in New York, and they talked about the New York tax that they're starting to, you know, throw on there, how the dealers are trying to quote unquote, because of the cost of living, add a little extra spice to those cards. And he goes, man, we think it traveled down to Philly because the prices and the dealers just weren't budging. So they walked away with nothing. Tony and I didn't buy a thing. So I, you know, again, there was people buying, but was it at the prices, say, somewhere maybe like in Burbank where they're more willing to deal? I don't know.
So what's Wolfpack, man? Is that a gang?
Well, basically what it is, it is kind of like a gang. It's a hobby gang. No, but honestly, you know, Cousin Tony and I, we had our Cousins Collectibles show that we started.
Yeah.
We had our podcast. We're like almost 80 episodes deep. And Rob, the sports card therapist, he had started just a DM session with a couple guys, three or four guys. And he listened to our podcast, and he just hit us up the one day. He's like, yo, I just have a couple guys that we just shoot the crap. You know, and we're in here when a DM, do you want to join in? We're like, yeah, cool. So we just get in this group chat, and we're talking. A month later, we're like, yo, let's just develop like a podcast. Let's all get together. Yeah. We'll do random podcasts and just throw it out there and see what happens. And
let's press record.
Yeah. Went from a couple guys just talking crap to now it's a hobby just, gang, the Wolfpack.
Yeah, I was just jabbing you. I know what it is. I keep up with you guys.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, that's
you never know. I don't know.
Yeah. That sounds like Hobby Hotline. Like,
yeah, hey, it is.
Let's get some guys together and we'll go on and do this show and invite people to join us, which, by the way, you guys are welcome to do out there. If you want to join the show, I will post the link. We would love to chat with you. Feel free to come on in and say hello. Yeah, go ahead, Victor.
I was going to say you got to leave them the link, but I see it. Somebody left the link.
Yeah. I just threw it up. I threw it on there.
Cool.
Man, I don't know about DJs at shows. I'm like,
I tell you what, there's a show. It's called the Fishtown Card Show. It's the actually only show that's inside the city of Philadelphia right now. It started a couple years back, and the promoter is an actual DJ. So he has the music playing in the background. It's not anything crazy. You know, it's just music. It's not blaring. It's not blasting. And it's all kinds of music. It's just like a playlist. And bro, you walk in, and if you're a fan of music, you walk in, and it's like a little vibe.
Yeah,
you
know? It does change the vibe. Yeah.
Just relax a little bit. There's a little bit of food if you want. You walk around, and next thing you know, you're chatting with the dealers, and deals are being made, and you just have that ambiance. And it's not distracting. It's not taken away from the whole, you know, oh, this is sacrilegious. How can we have music here? It's just, you don't even realize it. It's just background noise, a good background noise.
Yeah, that would be the key, I think, is the volume setting on that, right? Yeah.
Lev's asking, Mike didn't see you at the Dallas Card Show. So I did not make the Dallas Card Show for the same reason Victor was talking. Like, I can't – Dallas Card Show is every 2 months. You know, I can't just I don't have the scratch, right? Yeah. I got to save it up, and the Nationals coming up in a few months. And, you know, I've been there, done that. Dallas Show doesn't change a lot, honestly, if I'm being truthful. It's pretty much – rinse and repeat in terms of who's there and what kind of stuff is there. And, you know, it did. I want to do Philly. I want to do different shows. That's why I went to Burbank last month, which as soon as I committed to Burbank, I was like, well, I'm not going to the next Dallas show after that, because I'm definitely not going to be back up and running budget wise for that.
Now, Dallas, would that be primarily like vintage? Like what is that ever like? Just modern. What is it? Modern, really?
Okay. Tons and tons. It's 80-20.
Okay. Wow. So that's modern. Complete opposite of Philly show. It's like you go into the Philly show and it's all vintage until you get to the back, and then there's a little bit of modern.
Yeah.
Now Burbank, is that more like
pop? It was a good mix. It was a good mix. Yeah. tons of basketball. I mean, that's kind of Southern California is a hotbed for the hobby, right? I mean, there's so many people out there in the hobby. So there's a lot of bigger cards there, lots of money running around, and tons of modern, but a good mix. Like I would say it was more 60-40 modern to vintage. Would be my, you know, just 30,000 foot view of it.
Yeah.
I had plenty to look at. I'm a vintage guy. So I had plenty to look at, and it was like you said, there was an area that just felt like these were all the vintage dudes. And then over here is all the modern stuff. And it, again, well-run show, no questions, and people galore. So if shows are healthy now, here's the question on the table for you guys. We think shows are healthy now, bigger shows for sure. No doubt. What does that mean? What does that bode for the National coming up in 132 days? Does it even matter? Does it tell us anything?
I'll take that. I think it does. Because right now it's in Chicago. So everybody's going to have access to it. We were talking about earlier how Atlantic City, it was like, man, you're either going or you're not. And you made up your mind months in advance whether or not you were going to do that. So a lot of people from the West Coast, Midwest, were not making that trip to Atlantic City. It was just a nightmare to get in there. Just to even get there. So people were just like, man, you know what? I'm just going to wait till Chicago. It's going to be a lot easier. And, you know, it's just a mainstay when it comes to, you know, obviously the hobby. So I think with how it's going, obviously we had the peak drop down a little bit, but I see it slowly creeping back up. And the people that have stayed, you know, all the big rush of people, all the flippers are kind of like weeding themselves out. But the people that are left, you got your OGs, and then you had the people that had just came in. They're passionate. So now it's like we talked about it, the granddaddy of them all. So it's going to be easy access for everybody. And I think, you know, just seeing from these shows, especially the bigger shows and the amount of excitement that's been going on, I think, man, sky's the limit when it comes to this National. I think it's going to be off the hook.
Victor?
I think if Top Series 1 is any indication of what's going to happen with the hobby this year, I think it's going to explode. I didn't purchase any Top Series 1 this year, but as an observer, as a pretty heavy YouTube content observer as well.
Consumer.
Yeah. My goodness, was there a lot of hype around and buzz and excitement about Top Series 1. I was bigger and stronger than ever. And so if that's any indication of Fanatics marketing schemes and how they're going to generate buzz and excitement, look out, because they're going to really steal a lot of hearts this coming year.
Well, it helps, I think, for the hype. 2023 Top Series 1's a really solid design. Is it the best ever? No, but it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I like it a lot. And that helps make, you know, if a card looks good, it's going to be popular, right? Yeah. I mean, let's just be honest. That's issue number one of a card being popular. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Fanatics is talking. I think, by the way, Oz, you are 100% right. I think this Chicago National is going to blow the doors off in terms of attendance, hype, excitement, all of that stuff. It's going to be crazy. And we have this, you know, Michael Rubin was at the Philly show this last weekend, kind of giving some hints in terms of like, hey, stay tuned, right? We're going to have this announcement, once the generational announcement that they're going to make that they keep talking about. I think that's going to help people want to be at the show. They're going to want to be there. Where were you when Ruben announced blah, blah, blah? We don't know what it is. So let's talk about that real quick. Ruben or Tops has come out and said, we're going to have this announcement soon, right? What is that? What does soon mean? I don't know, but soon. And what are your opinions? Victor, you go first. If you were to guess what the Tops generational announcement is going to be, what would you say it's going to be?
Yeah. Yeah. I love this question because it allows us to speculate, right? Now, they did say that it was going to be released in the month of March. I didn't hear it, but is that what you guys heard? Next month? Next month?
It is March. So,
yeah. Yes. So maybe coming soon. My speculation on it, and I've given this a lot of thought, and I think what that word generational really captures my curiosity anyways. Personally, I think they're going to purchase Upper Deck and or the contracts that they have with Jordan, James, Tiger Woods, and that gang.
Ooh.
And that's okay. Going to give them the rights to print those cards and look out.
So we want to timestamp this, guys, because if any of the three of us are right on what we think it is, y'all got to come back and say, man, Victor, you're a genius, or Oz, you're a genius. You will not be saying Mike's a genius, but hey, let's this will be interesting.
Yeah.
Oz, what do you think?
Man, I don't know how you could beat that one. That just kind of like threw me for a loop. I wasn't expecting that, but that would be totally awesome, you know.
Yeah.
Just to get that Upper Deck going, get some, you know, some real PMGs, not this stuff that came out just recently with the Metal Universe. But dude, Michael Rubin, he's the king when it comes to just hyping stuff up. You know, he was at the Philly show, so he rolled in with all the Sixers. I know you guys don't, you know, aren't big, but he rolled in with Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris, you know, guys like that. And the room was just like, wow, you know, it was a buzz. They, you know, not only because the Sixers are walking through, but here's Michael Rubin, you know, the face of the future. And he actually, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Santiago, who's big in New Jersey, has a couple shops, younger kid, but he seems to have a good head on his shoulders, good business acumen. And he did a little interview with Michael, and Michael, again, just saying, listen, be ready. It's going to be a generational type shift when it comes to the hobby. Man, I honestly, dude, I can't even think about what the hell it could be. I really can't. I'm not going to sit here. You could timestamp this. You could say Oz didn't know what the hell he was thinking. I don't know. I've been trying to think about what, you know, Fanatics can do to take it to the next level. But honestly, Tony and I, we always talked about, like, you know, just incorporating the cards into sporting events, you know, just having maybe the card shops. And, you know, so if you go to a Sixers game or if you go to an NFL game, the cards will be there for you to purchase. And, you know, you can actually, when, you know, you buy a hobby box, more interaction with the athletes. I think they were talking about that, where you can actually win, you know, just say a sit down or a Skype or a Zoom meeting with one of your professional athletes of your choice, you know, something like that. Mostly on card autos and, you know, no more of this sticker crap that everybody's pissed about. Just taking everything that we've been bitching and complaining about over the past years. And like I said, with Michael Rubin, they put a ton of money into this. They got all the licenses. So now it's just about, we got all these people here and we put a lot of money into this. We got to think of ways to make sure that we're going to make money. At the end of the day, they didn't do this just because they wanted to make the hobby great. They did it because they wanted to make money. So they're not, you know, they're not going to sit here and just twiddle their fingers and lose money. Okay. We had the boom. It's dropped down. So now what are we going to do to move it to the next level? So what are you saying? Fanatics is going to have to prove to me that they care about the hobby and not just money. Exactly what I was saying. But the way they do that, obviously they're going to have to do that to make money. So whatever they're going to do, it's got to be big and it's got to attract a lot of people. And I think it's going to be something that it's going to be inclusive to everyone, not just the OGs that have been here forever and a day and, you know, make everybody happy. That's a Topps collector. It's going to be something big that everybody's going to be like, oh, wow, damn, you know, and make the people that have been here a while excited, and especially the new people that they can bring in, the fresh blood. And there's going to be people that are going to be disappointed as well. You know, the OGs that have been here a while, some of those sweetheart deals that they've been grandfathered into that might not be happening. You know, things, you know, the breakers, not all the breakers out there are going to be continue to do what they're going to do. And they might go ahead and just have a one-stop shop, which what it seems to be, you know. So I don't know. I talked a bunch of crap. I have no idea. I try to make it sound good, at least.
You did. You did, man.
I wish we had like a soundboard. I could snap. I could go. I just talked a bunch of crap. I don't have any. Like, we should grab that and like be able to play it again when somebody's.
What I'm good at. It's what I'm good at.
If I was to speculate, I think they're going to announce synergy among all their sporting sport. Meaning, you're going to have the same line of products in football, basketball, baseball. Let's take the major three, right? And you're going to have, because once in a generation, I mean, think about it. This generation doesn't know Topps Chrome basketball. They don't know Topps Chrome football. Yeah. They never had it. And I think hobby generations are even a smaller amount of time than real generations, right? So I think from a generational standpoint, you're going to see this synergy among the products all being aligned. And you're going to see, I think they'll still, you know, they're already talking about getting rid of certain, we're not going to do this year. We're not doing these products, whatever. All these products are dropping. They're going to have 10 to 12, 15 maybe product across the board. You can get a Topps Chrome. It's going to all have the same basic design for Chrome, let's say, or finest. Like the basketball would look like the baseball this year. You know, the football would have looked like they were doing it all from top, it would all be the same basic design. And you're going to start seeing synergy because I think that the hobby would embrace that. I personally, all these different things, you know, there's too much. It's like, whoa, there's 1,822 parallels in Prism or whatever. You know, you're just like, okay, enough. And that doesn't mean they can still print the heck out of it. Yeah. Right. That doesn't stop them from printing it like crazy. Mm-hmm. You just don't need to have all the crazy stuff. And to me, that would be a huge announcement. Because talk about people going nuts over Chrome football, Chrome basketball again. And, you know, whatever, you know, Bowman, everything. You'll have Bowman, you know. Football, basketball, baseball, right?
Yeah.
Bowman Chrome, draft, like those core.
So what's old is new again, you know?
Yeah. So guess what? I don't know either. but at least what they are doing that's pretty smart is we're sitting here talking about it.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. that's the main thing, Mike, is generating that excitement. And for the people that, you know, you're going to have the old guys on the porch, you know, talking to smack. Oh, you got to prove to me that, you know, you're not in for the money, this, that, and a third.
Logan is old?
I'm old. I'm going to be 50. So it is what it is. But what I'm saying is what they're doing, they're bringing that excitement. And guess what? If you don't like it, that doesn't mean like collecting stops. You still have all this other stuff that you could just go back to collecting up until this point. You know, you can go back to vintage. You can go back into what they call modern and ultra modern, whatever you want to do. So it's like, don't be that curmudgeon, that guy that's just putting his foot in the sand, just saying, you know what? I don't care what Fanatics does. They're not going to, you know, prove to me that they're doing it for me. They're doing it for money. Obviously, everybody's doing it for money. You know, we could sit here and we could talk all that smack. We do love to collect. Let's not get it wrong. But at the end of the day, we'd like to make some money off of this. You know, if we sell a card, we would like to make more than what we got it for. You know, let's not try to be holier than thou. It is what it is. it's a cool hobby that you can make some money if you're lucky. But here comes Fanatics and they're trying to capitalize on that. They see that there's a ton of interest in it. So why not, you know, make money? But in the process of doing that, like we were talking about the shows, taking it to the 21st century, moving it forward. And if you don't agree with it, you can just go backwards. There's no problem. You know, the hobby's still going to be there. So let's not get all up in arms and, you know, have another false grievance that everybody's just like, oh, here we go. You know, it's just like, yo, do what you do. Like Cousin Tony and I, we always talk about like, collect what you want, collect what you love, and do it to the best of your ability and what makes you happy. So if you love vintage, collect vintage. If you love the modern, collect the modern, whatever it is. If you love memorabilia, but you know, it makes me laugh how sometimes this hobby, people spend more time complaining than actually having fun. And if you're doing that, then you got to look at it at a different angle. It's like, dude, what are you really doing? Is this really a hobby for you? Or is this just a bitch session? I don't know.
Oz, you preaching now, man.
Preaching. I do kind of dig an idea that you mentioned. I want to kind of dive into it a little more. The idea of incorporating, you know, again, we got all these licenses with these player associations, you know, and they're involved, like they're in it. They're a part of the process more than ever before. The idea of creating experiences, I mean, think about the Topps Transcendent Party. Who doesn't want to go to that? Or the Panini National, you know, party that they have every year. Now, the problem with those things, they are awesome. The cost to entry is huge.
Right.
I mean, you either got to buy a Transcendent case, right, for 25, 30 grand, or you got to buy however much worth of wax to get an invite to the Panini party, those types of things. If they start making it where, hey, in Top Series 1, we're going to have five invitations, you know, you can chase five invitations to go have batting practice with Mike Trout, or, you know, just something, an experience. God, Victor, do you remember, or Oz, you might remember, when we were kids, like you could win World Series tickets, like the little scratch offs, right, in the pack. Of course, nobody ever scratched them off because there was no way you were going to win tickets to the World Series. But if you make that where it's like a legit thing, possible, like they have multiple different experiences across different sports, all-star game tickets, this, that, you know,
Super Bowl,
all these things, that becomes a fun chase, right? And it's more than just the cards that you're pulling, you know, the golden tickets that you might, you know, whatever, Willy Wonka, right? That idea of, man, are you pull a ticket and it's a game used jersey of Jalen Hurts signed game used jersey or something.
Now you're talking. You know
what I mean? Yeah, I went there, but more than just cards, it's got to be like, okay, remember kids used to only buy the cards because they wanted the bubble gum. It wasn't even, oh, these cards are kind of cool too. You know, it made the bubble gum even better.
Right.
Well, make the cards even better by
spicing
it up in a way. Yeah. Don't chop up the jersey and stick it in 1,000 cards. You know, give away the jersey.
Oh, I love it.
You see what I mean? Like, that would be, wow. Ruben, are you listening? Like, we're just spitballing here, but I'm saying some of these dogs.
In a roundabout way, I was talking a lot of smack, but I kind of brought that up. So that timestamp that was me. I brought that up.
But I'm agreeing with you. I think did that, you would bring in a different collector, a different type of person. That's
kids will be interested in that. You know what I mean? That's the lifeline. That's the lifeblood of the hobby. We can all, you know, we're just getting older. If we don't get the young kids involved, you know, the hobby's just going to be, it is what it is, and it's going to die out. So we need to get that fresh blood going.
Ooh, I mean, here's a good one. Orlando said free trip to the National.
Nice.
That's actually special meet and greet, you know, or whatever.
Be a VIP with Michael Rubin going around to all the, you know, the hot parties, and that'd be nice.
Yeah. We're so old now, guys. Like I'm almost, I'll be 50 this year too, Oz. So I'm like, you know, can I have some Excedrin like in my pack of, you know, or some Advil?
Listen, I'm a mailman. I feel pains that I've never felt before in my life, like my knee, my ankle, my I freaking got an ingrown toenail. I could barely walk yesterday. So yeah, I could use that stuff. That would be nice.
I think we're vintage now.
Yeah.
We're definitely agreed. And I do believe that they can be smart with pricing, especially if you start cutting out layers of bureaucracy within the system that has existed for eons. So let's say a box is $500. I'm just going to use simple math. Then you have the distributor who's taken his cut, and then it goes to the shop owner who marks it. You know, you have all these layers of markup, and it turns into a $800 box. I'm just using simple. It's not exact, but just go with me on this. Well, they could still sell the box for $600 on Tops Online or whatever, Fanatics, Lids, stores, whatever. They're still making more money, but the end consumer is saving that $200. They've just, you know, eliminated all the fluff in that process. They certainly have the distribution network to be able to, I mean, that's what they do. They are a distribution company, period, paragraph, and they're really, really good at it. I don't know. I think prices will come down and Tops will still make an ass ton of money.
Yes.
End user prices will come down. They can still print it as much as they want, all that good stuff. Stadium exclusives, you know.
Yeah.
Real Gear redemptions you can get right there. You know, that how cool would that be? That's a great idea.
Get a jersey right there or
redeem this at the Fanatics shop at the stadium right now. Go get your team's jersey or whatever.
That'd be cool.
That is a good
Michael Ham fishing and sports card hobbyist. He says, start pulling redemptions for Rolex watches. That'll catch my attention.
A redemption for a Ferrari or, you know, hey, now we're talking. Chase the Ferrari. And yes, Logan's right. If you don't have affordable prices, it's never going to be as inclusive as we want it to be as a hobby. You're not going to attract kids if prices stay where they are.
Right.
Because they simply, now granted, we all see kids at shows with better collections than we'll ever have. But most kids, right, are, you know, saving up lunch money or their allowance and trying to buy cards with it. So prices need to come down.
Prism football, I hear, is coming out at $700 a hobby box.
Wow.
That's just astronomical amount of money, in my opinion.
that's something... They're going to have to figure out a way to get the kids involved, you know, excuse me, whether it's doing these special things. But like you said, having a price point, there can be one set that is not exclusive for kids, but that's just affordable that anybody that can come in and get a, you know, a $50 box or, you know, no more than $100 and be able to pull some cool stuff out of there, not just junk. And then have these, you know, things to keep the kids interested. And then from there, they can build that set and then move up on like we used to do. So,
One thing that concerns me with kids is it seems, and I'm saying this because I have five kids of mine. I've raised five kids. My kids are adults now, but they just seemed like the generation, they were more into video games and they were, you know, sports. And just, it seems like kids nowadays don't really even seem interested in sports. It's more, when we're talking cards and kids, they're more drawn to Pokemon.
Yeah.
Or you know, whatever trading game that's popular out there. And it seems like we're really losing that draw, that pull towards kids and sports for whatever reason.
I
agree with you. I don't think it's as universal as it used to be in terms of the love of sports for kids.
Our generation per se,
there's plenty of them out there. Like I think there's still plenty of kids. To me, U.S. sports cars, why wouldn't they just sell it for $800 themselves? Because the market's not going to bear it. I think we have learned communally that a prison box should not be $700. I'm not going to pay that. There will be some suckers that do, but by and large, I think I go to my Walmart, man, it is packed with cards.
Yeah.
I could buy anything I want for the last 2 years. It's all there, still at SRP. Nobody's buying it. Demand will change the economics of this hobby over. It's not going to happen overnight. I'm not, you know, they're still living in fantasy land too. But at some point, people are going to go, enough, I'm not paying that. And they're going to start coming down. We're going to start seeing clearance aisles again for cards and stuff at half price.
Right. That FOMO isn't there like it was 2 years ago. So, and the people that are left are experienced and they know, like you said, they're just going to put their foot down and say, I'm not paying that. So either it's going to stay on the shelves or you lower your prices or I'll just go collect something else. And man, and listen, I go to these shows, every show I go to, I see kids and I hear what you're saying with the video games. I was a huge video gamer growing up, but I played sports as well.
We were Super Mario guys.
It's definitely a different dynamic as to, you know, everything's like, it's like the fast food generation, the microwave generation. They want everything right here, right now. You get on Instagram, you can get on the internet and whatever you want. If you have a question, you can get it right away. Where we had to go to the damn library and, you know, maybe look at an encyclopedia. These kids have access to anything and everything. So
Dewey Decimal System.
Yeah, Dewey Decimal. So it's totally different. But the fact is, man, I think once you start getting a little bit older, you just start having that appreciation for nostalgia. So it may not be, you know, cards, but it might be video games. You know, there's the whole thing that's going on with Heritage Auctions and, you know, WADA. And I don't know if you guys heard about it. There's like a whole big kerfuffle when it comes to those video games. But, you know, those are the things.
Maybe, tell me what a kerfuffle is.
I don't know what that means, but it sounded good. who knows what kids are going to be collecting 20, 30 years from now. But I still think, you know, the hobby and the cards will always be there, and there's going to be a love for that, you know, and it's like a generational type thing that you pass down to your kids, man. And they might not like it now, but as they get older, they will.
And real collectors
still collect.
I like what Rich Frank says here. Real collectors still collect, because who's to say that they might start off as Pokemon collectors,
right,
but transition into sports card collectors as they get older.
Exactly.
So that's always a possibility, yep, right?
That's more than a possibility.
Yeah. I think it's human nature, dude, to collect the hunting and the gathering. That's always going to be there.
I talk about this a lot. There's an evolution of a collector. We all start out. I did in the early mid 80s. I collected the here and now guys. I wanted Jose Canseco's and Don Mattingly's and Daryl Strawberry rookies and Doc Gooden, Roger Clemens. I wanted those guys when I was a kid. I evolved as a collector and went, you know, that stuff's cool and I love it and great. I want to go back and buy Mickey Mantles now.
Yeah.
Because we all saw it in the shops and we could just never afford it. It was just out of our range. And we get to a point in our life cycle where, oh, I do have a little more discretionary income. I can't afford those cards I could never afford. Now, today's generation, it might be the 90s, cool 90s inserts of Jordan or, you know, PMG, you know, just stuff like that. That's their vintage in their brain, fine, but they're still going to go, you know, what's the next level for me to collect it? I want to evolve. Right. It's just this natural evolution of a collector. Everybody starts off collecting the here and now, and it totally makes sense. That's who you're watching. That's who you're following on Instagram or Twitter or, you know, watching your favorite team, right? Yep. It totally makes sense. But then you go, you know, everybody, I think timeline's different for everyone, but we all go, you know, what else is out there that I might like? And it's just natural. I think it's just a natural evolution.
Agreed.
Mike, if there were 1,000 different rookie variations of those 80 stars, I would have probably been less enthusiastic about it, honestly, versus, you know, Tony Gwynn has 3 rookie cards, Topps, Donruss, Fleer, right? you know, so I don't know how I'd react. It would be overwhelming today to me if I was to start collecting a guy in this modern world.
Yeah. You know, you talk about the short prints or the low serial number on card autos with the patches, game use, you know, so you can definitely start to create a niche of what you're trying to do with today's cards. But even still, 101s, there's like 1,000 101s. So what's going to make this one more special than that one, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now? So yeah, that's tough. But it's almost like as you go, as time goes on, you know, what's vintage for us now, that's going to be overpriced for, you know, somebody that's 20 years from now. They're not going to go back and be able, if a Mickey Mantle's 12.5 million now, what the hell is it going to be in 10 years? You know what I mean? So those kids that are collecting now, they're, like you said, though, it's not going to be the vintage, our vintage. It's going to be the 80s and the 90s, and they're just going to have to figure it out. And that's going to be, to me, that's pretty cool, though. You know, it's a different way to collect because there's just so much variety. So now it's like, okay, I think it's just going to be more of a, like you said, creating your own niche of what you want to do. So it's going to be more stylized. Not so much before we were all set collectors. Everybody wanted to build sets. You're not going to be, you know, I don't see a lot of people doing that now with the modern stuff. So it's going to be I'm going to collect this player and I'm going to collect just 101s, or I'm going to collect, you know, golds, and then they, you know, figure out something like that they can build their collection that way. Cause it's just going to be impossible with all the variations to try to get it all. So that's interesting.
I think there's one exception to the whole set collecting thing, and that's Flagship Tops every year.
True.
I think that's immune to that set collecting thing. Mike's right. That's unusual, but Mike is right. Let's read this. Leveling up means going backwards. Yeah, in time. You're going back in time, right? Yeah. That's what leveling up means.
Basically.
Danny Black here, Sports Vault. He went to the World Baseball Classic today in Miami. Dominican Republic walk-off, apparently.
Nice.
DR versus, can't remember who they played. He'll tell me in just a sec. I don't know. Are y'all into the World Baseball Classic?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Are you kidding me? That's like a little mini World Series here before the season starts.
Definitely fun, man. Just to see everybody. Whoa, shoot. So Dominican Republic, is that today?
Yeah.
So it looks like they won 10-0 over Israel.
Oh, must not have. Yeah, they beat Israel. That's right.
Okay.
DR versus Puerto Rico tomorrow.
Ooh, that's going to be.
Ooh, that's huge. Now that's bragging rights right there.
After that perfect game, I tell you, I haven't watched it yet. I got it recorded, but I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, I know. You know, I'm Puerto Rican, and I know a bunch of Dominicans that I work with, mailmen that are just talking smack.
Yeah. Here we go.
Bro, it's just all about bragging rights. It, you know, they care less about the Phillies and the Yankees right now. It's you know, it's all about pride.
Yeah.
I actually love that aspect of it because no matter who the guys play for week, you know, day to day in the major leagues or in the Korean League or the, you know, wherever, we can unite under our flag of wherever we're from, wherever our, and like if there was an Irish baseball team, I'd be rooting for them. You know, I'm an American, but I have Irish roots. Right. So I would love to see that. And if you're Jewish and you love the Israel team coached by Ian Kinsler, believe it or not, but Team USA, they're stacked, right? Trout homered last night. They can't pitch for darn, but boy, they can hit. And Otani doing what, you know, it's just cool, right? And it's sad to me. It doesn't feel like there's nearly enough buzz about it in the general sports world. It's almost like an afterthought. Oh, yeah, and the World Baseball Classic is going on.
Agreed.
And I'm like, this should be a bigger deal.
It should be like Scherzer, the Olympics.
Did y'all see what Scherzer said? He said it'd be better if it was like a mid-season thing.
Then
really,
yeah.
I don't know. But would the players be down for that? You know,
no, mid-season? Of course not.
Right,
and neither would the teams.
Right,
the MLB would be like, "Oh heck no, you're not interrupting our season for some silly thing." But they do that for World Cup soccer. They interrupt the season of soccer to do the World Cup. Everybody leaves and goes, you know, from.
Do they really?
Yeah.
That's true.
Wow.
So
yeah, soccer.
But soccer's on a different level of nutso. It's like the chicken and the egg, right? The World Cup was first before all of these Premier Leagues and all this stuff. So they kind of get to go, we're going to do what we want to do. And
when we want to do it.
You guys can suck it, right? And first is this World Baseball Classic's relatively new. They can't go to MLB and say, hey, we're going to stick this right in the middle of the season. How do you feel about that? They're gonna not gonna work.
Yeah, I think the concept is just it's beautiful. It's a wonderful thing.
Yeah. So now Japan is 4-0, Venezuela is 3-0, and you got Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic both 2-1. USA's 2-1. So I mean, dude, the excitement, it's crazy. It's almost like I guess you can compare it to soccer, the environment. You know, you got the music in the background, everybody's going crazy. And, you know, when Otani hit that home run and in front of everybody there in his home crowd, it was just unbelievable, that excitement. So, I'm digging it.
Who did the U.S. lose to?
Let me see.
They lost to Mexico.
Was it Mexico?
Really?
Mexico beat them like 12-5.
It's hard keeping up with it because there's like at all hours of the night, even games going on, and it's hard to. I've been recording them, and then I listen to the ones I want to, you know, pay attention to, but.
US lost 11-5.
Oh wow. Okay.
That was on Sunday. Yep.
Yeah, it's a awesome concept. I actually like the run rule thing, believe it or not.
10-run rule.
Yeah. 15 after 5, 10 after 7 or 6, whatever. Like that makes sense. Like, why do you need to keep beating the crap out of these guys?
Yeah.
I think it'll get more attention as once we get out of pool play.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
I think once you get to the quarterfinals, you know, and you've got really the best teams left.
Yeah. I think similar to the World Cup, I think that's how it kind of went. And then once, you know, the World Cup came the final and these guys were going at it, and you had Mbappe against Messi, that man, I've never watched soccer, and I watched that and I was mesmerized by what was going on. And, you know, they went into the overtime and everything, the special kicks, penalty kicks. And I was like, man, this is awesome. I see what they're talking about now.
So, you mean you were messierized?
Ah, nice.
That's a good one. Is that a dad joke? I don't know.
Speaking of awesome sporting events, today begins what I think is the greatest sporting event. It's my favorite sporting event every year, and that is March Madness.
Nice.
And we've got a couple more minutes here. Do y'all get into it? Are y'all doing brackets? Are you, you know, do you think about who's going to be the number? Like, I don't think it really matters card wise. It's just more fandom.
Yeah.
I don't think it affects the hobby a ton other than guys can come out of nowhere and be stars. Steph Curry, for example, right?
Davidson.
Yep. You know, I mean, he was good, but the NCAA tournament allowed him to showcase his skills to the nation.
Right.
Right. It's a different platform than being in, you know, the far west, nobody cares conference. Right. Or whatever.
Right.
So to me, it can give players an opportunity to really shine and become household names with opportunities and the upsets. And to me, there's nothing like the first two weekends of the NCAA tournament. You're watching basketball for four straight days.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it's pretty true. And you all day, all night, like,
yeah, yeah.
And I'm checking my bracket and, you know, I'm picking teams I have no idea about, but
yeah,
I'm
gonna, I used to be right. Back in the day that, you know, NCAA tournament was my thing and I'd know every team. And I'm not going to lie. Lately, I don't know if it's just because how the NBA and everything and how it's worked, the one and done. And then sometimes you didn't even have to go. So there was a lot of the talent wasn't even playing in the tournament and it kind of just got watered down which it was not the best talent, but it was pretty cool seeing the competitiveness and how everybody could just anybody could knock out anybody. It wasn't just like back in the day where like if you knew Duke was playing or, you know, North Carolina, those guys, they were going to make it to the Final Four no matter what. And if you were a 16 seed, you had no shot. And now it's like everybody has a shot, which is pretty cool. And then you'll see those diamonds in the rough, those players that, you know, that are probably, you know, third year guys, fourth year guys that just go out there and they dominate. And then they're able to sometimes go in and take it into the NBA and make things happen. But I'm a Penn Stater, graduated from Penn State. So it's good to see them in there. I think they're a 10 seed. So I'd like to see them, you know, upset a couple people.
I'm a TCU graduate. So TCU, you know, has had an amazing sports year. They're top 10 in baseball. They were number two in football. They're in the toughest conference in the country. The Big 12 was just murderer's row this year. It was absolutely nut. Every day you're like, God, we got to play these guys. Like, when are we playing the Colorado School for the Blind? Like, when's that game? Like, that, there are no games like that. And so it's been fun. They're a six seed, I think. So I'm looking forward to that. You know, the sad thing is on my bracket is I'm a homer guy, right? So I got TCU like going to the Elite Eight, and there's no real chance that they're, I mean, they could, but like any team could, but it's not realistic. So it's going to blow up my bracket. You know, they're going to get beat.
Yeah, yeah, but it's fun.
It is fun. So who's your, Victor, do you follow college basketball at all?
I do not. I graduated from the School of Hard Knocks and they don't have a team.
You got your PhD there, didn't you?
Yeah.
They're an up-and-comer.
I don't, I pay attention like at Final Four. I'll pay attention and watch a little bit, but I don't follow it.
All right. So this will be funny. Oz and I, to be dangerous, we're going to pick who's going to win. And then Victor's going to just throw a name out there and he's probably going to be right. That just tells you how silly this whole thing is. In one bracket, I have Alabama winning it all. And the other one, I have Kansas. I have two brackets total. I think either of those teams could win it all. Oz, what would you say?
I'm looking at it. Let's go.
I'll give you two choices. You can pick two teams that could win it all.
I'll say Kansas or UCLA.
I got UCLA losing in the second round.
Yeah, well, I never watched them play this year, so I don't know. I'm just going by names that I'm familiar with.
UCLA is pretty good this year, actually. They're pretty good.
I would have said Penn State, but yeah, I know that's not going to happen.
All right, go ahead, Victor.
Georgetown.
They're not in it. They just fired Patrick Ewing. Just fired their coach.
Purdue's in it, right?
Yeah. Duke is in it, yeah.
Yeah, Purdue's number one.
Or Purdue's number one. Yeah, you're an Indiana guy. You should be rooting for Purdue. They got that. Yeah, they're good. I think they're going to get exposed, though, when they get into teams that run. Purdue's going to be in trouble because teams are just going to run them off the court. You know, any of the Big 12 teams would just make them run like crazy. Doesn't mean they wouldn't beat most Big 12 teams, but it's going to be harder than they think. They're not going to just run through it. Man, that is it for us, guys. We had a quick, awesome hour talking about all kinds of stuff. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Victor, Oz, thanks for joining. As always, thank you all you guys out there for joining in the show, in the chat, all you guys that came on the... Oh, wait, nobody came on.
Man, that's because we were so interesting, bro. They were just... They were messiarized.
All right, guys, y'all have a great week.
Good night.
Happy Tuesday to y'all. Good night. Have a good one.
See you soon, Vic.
All right, man.
Selecting.
You got it.